Tonight and tomorrow, a very special guest artist will appear at Western Michigan University. He's alto saxophonist Miguel Zenon, and he'll be joining the Western Jazz Quartet tonight in a performance at 8 o'clock and throughout the day tomorrow for the 35th annual Western Invitational Jazz Festival. Miguel is in the studio here today, as well as Tom Kinnifick, the chair of the Jazz Studies Department at WMU, and the professor of saxophone, Andrew Rathbun. Welcome to all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Kara.
Great to be here.
Good to be.
Well, Tom, I should start with you as being the arranger of this whole festival and, of course, inviting Miguel to Western Michigan University. It's going to be a very exciting concert tonight, I'm sure.
It's a special weekend for us every year, 35 years going in. I imagine we're the longest-running jazz festival, collegiate-based jazz festival in Michigan. We gather anywhere between 300 and 400 high school students from 2 to 3 to 4 states, depending on the year. And in the last few years, I have to say, we've developed a sort of habit of bringing guests that are at a little bit higher artistic aesthetic level than you might suspect at a collegiate jazz festival like this. And Andrew had a term for it. I can't remember. He said, we're just the different one, I guess he said. But this is absolutely endemic of that with Miguel Zenon.
How did you first learn about Miguel's playing?
Well, Miguel's an icon in this music, and you know, he's just out there, you know, and he's, of course, one of the few jazz artists that's won the MacArthur, what they call it, the Genius Grant. He's a MacArthur Fellow. And then personally, he's a member of the San Francisco Jazz Collective, which has been here through the aegis of Fontana Chamber Arts and played in our Dalton Center. And of course, we have middle of 3 years relationship with Edward Simon, who's the pianist in that group and who's been here as recently as last month. And so when we're thinking about guests, you know, we always want something, the guest has to have music that works with the big band and, of course, with the faculty group and different settings. So we have to, like, take all that into consideration. And really excited that the most recent CD project of Miguel is a big band CD. And so all the stars just aligned for us, and he was available, and we couldn't be happier.
I would encourage listeners right now to go to miguelzenon.com and have a look at some of the lineups on the records and some of the incredible variety there. And Miguel, last night I clicked on YouTube, you know, and there's a lot of stories of you and hearing you play. I felt kind of bad about it because one of the things I watched was this concert from like a year ago in Poland, and somebody had said, well, I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, maybe I shouldn't put this up, but I'm going to put up this concert anyway. So you probably had nothing to do with it being on YouTube, but it was still such a treat to see your quartet really bringing so much to this new repertoire and the new album.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to fight what's already out there, you know. And I do remember that concert. I was actually talking to Tom yesterday about it, because his wife is from there, and we were talking about that performance and getting the opportunity to play there and having it all recorded. And you know, for me, it's I'm just happy to get the chance to go out there and play and get to, you know, play my own music, and really, really excited about the opportunity to play here and come here and share with everyone here. I have to say it's not the norm for me. I've done, you know, stuff like this before, but just to get that many opportunities, you know, to play with the faculty and then play with a smaller group and then play with the big band, there's so many avenues of things to do, and it's just exciting to try to find music that would fit every project and every ensemble, and just get here and see how everyone is so prepared and so kind of into putting it all together. It's been really, really great.
It's keeping you on your toes?
Yeah, of course.
Wow. That's good to hear. Again, the concert is tonight with the Western Jazz Quartet, and tomorrow a 4 o'clock masterclass open to the public in the Dalton Center. And then at 7:30, we'll see all the winning ensembles playing jazz prepared in the last couple of days.
Yes.
With Miguel and faculty of Western at the helm. I need to share your story with listeners. One thing, since we're in an educational setting here, I found it really, really neat that there was a guy in your neighborhood that offered music instruction for free to anyone who wanted it. And at that point, you could go on and take more committed lessons or something. But mm-hmm. there was just this guy who offered free lessons.
Yeah. I mean, I think us musicians, we all have someone like that, you know, that like the first person that really makes a difference and kind of puts you on track. And in this neighborhood where I grew up in Puerto Rico, I was kind of, you know, being introduced to music a little bit at school already and, you know, playing a little recorder and, you know, children's choir, that kind of stuff. But from some friends at that school mentioned this gentleman, and his name was Ernesto Vigoro. And he would come over from another neighborhood in kind of the same area every day. And I'm talking about this guy was maybe, when I met him, maybe in his 70s, 75, something like that. And he had been doing this for years, you know, with many generations. And it's like, yeah, you could just go and he would teach you how to read music. I was like, read music? Are you kidding me? Like, I would be able to do that? And like, and then you can pick an instrument. And like, I was like, wow, you know. So I had my grandmother take me over there with my sister. And we both, like, you know, went over and had the first lesson. My sister hated it. She never came back. But I loved it, of course. You know, I was like, man, this is great. And you know, just that first kind of experience with someone kind of sitting you down and telling you, okay, this is all this stuff that you hear. This is how it works. You know, this is an eighth note. This is a quarter note. And this is what this is called. And this is how you read it. And this is how you solfège. And part of the process was that you go in every day, every week, a couple times a week, and he would basically teach you how to read music and teach you like a basic theory. And then when he thought you were ready, he would let you pick an instrument, you know, so you could play it in the marching band from the community. And when it came time for me to pick an instrument, he recommended someone who had a cheap, you know, $200 saxophone or something. So my mom took me over and we got the saxophone. But at that time, I was admitted into this performing arts middle school and high school, which I ended up going for 6 years, and that's where I eventually kind of continued my studies. So I never joined the marching band. I never got to play with the band, but I still, you know, really remember just super fondly just that first that kind of experience, and just especially because he was coming out of such a special place. I mean, he was doing this for free. He was just coming in and sharing, and you know, that's the kind of thing that kind of sticks with you for a while.
Yeah, it's when you try to make money off of music that things get really complicated. Mm-hmm. Somewhat difficult. And then just a, you know, must have seen just a very short time later, at 19, you're in Boston at the Berklee College of Music. And then you hook up with the Puerto Rican community in New York and find a new home there, pretty much. At this point, your jazz voice is developing, and you're experimenting with composing at this point?
Yeah, well, I like you mentioned, around 19 or so, I moved to Boston to go to school at Berklee, which was a big deal for me because I, even though I had gone to school in Puerto Rico, my training had been, well, classical saxophone, so I'd never studied jazz formally in Puerto Rico till I got to Boston. That's, you know, the first time somebody kind of talked to me about jazz harmony and theory and history and all that stuff. Everything I knew before then, I knew it because I learned it on my own, just because I had self-interest, you know. So that was big, you know, and just kind of going through that process, and then eventually moved to New York and went to school there. And like you mentioned, I've stayed in New York. I've been in New York now for almost 16 years, so it's my home pretty much now, you know. As I was going through college, I felt like I was still sort of catching up with a lot of the information that was coming out of the jazz world and jazz language and all that. So I didn't really start writing music till way after college, you know. And when I started writing music, the thing that really made me want to look at it from a different perspective was starting to look up music of Puerto Rico, the music of Latin America, which I grew up with and I was very familiar with, but I'd never really studied from the musician's point of view. I've never, you know, like looked at it in terms of what meter it is, what kind of harmony, what's going on, you know. So once I started doing that, kind of like the same thing that I had done with jazz, kind of like going deeper and studying it from, you know, from that point of view, it was just really natural. Like a lot of elements started finding, you know, its way into some of the stuff that I was starting to write, and it just felt, the more I did it, the more natural it felt. So I took it super seriously and kind of took, you know, went into it almost as a kind of like a research project, trying to learn more about Puerto Rican music, Puerto Rican history, and the, you know, music of Latin America and the Caribbean, and trying to find ways to incorporate that into what I was doing. And I mean, I still have a long way to go, of course, but I feel that this road is, it's something that feels honest to me, you know?
Yeah, it is quite the phenomenon where you start studying something and it only teaches you that you know so little.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I would like to take a musical break to let the music speak for you, Miguel. I think people would love to hear this direct, gorgeous, gorgeous tone from the horn. And if you don't mind, I'd like to pick out My Home, a track from your latest CD, Identities Are Changeable, and then we can talk about this special project afterward.
Great.
I've thought about moving to Puerto Rico maybe like in my older age. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely a New Yorker at heart. And I love how busy it is, and it's just, you know, where I was born and raised, and it's just a part of me. So maybe when I'm in an older age, I'll give up the busy New Yorker life for, you know, more peaceful life.
That's music by my guest, Miguel Zenon, and it's from his new album, Identities Are Changeable. And as you can hear, it sounds a little different from most big band albums because you get to hear voices of people very close to you, Miguel. Would you tell us who we heard on that track?
You heard a couple of folks. Basically, what I did for this project was I interviewed a bunch of friends, some family too, all of them New Yorkers, but of Puerto Rican descent. The idea behind this project is that all this music is written around the idea of identity and what that means, and specifically from the perspective of the Puerto Rican community in New York City, which is the largest outside of Puerto Rico. I've been interested in this subject for a while. I have family in New York, and you know, I've been in the States for a while in connection, like kind of in contact with the Puerto Rican communities over here, and I've always been kind of blown away by this idea of, you know, patriotism, kind of away from home, and this idea of kind of like a national identity, but that's, you know, over like always kind of a chip on your shoulder, like, yeah, you know, I'm from there and I want you to know this kind of thing, which you don't really see in Puerto Rico, you know. So it was just a different perspective for me, and kind of went into this project, wanted to learn more about it. So I started doing some interviews, talking to some of my friends about their experience and just their connection to different things like language and home and music. And out of those conversations, you know, eventually we kind of got into, you know, specific kind of subjects came out, and like kind of threads, starting connecting all the different interviews. And I basically took some of those threads and put them together and started writing music around like clips that I took from the interviews, like sort of creating a narrative.
So you treated the vocal parts as musical parts.
Yeah, that was the idea. I mean, the interviews, they were kind of almost serving as the role of a soloist in that case. You know, like when they happen, it's almost like the spotlight is on them. The music is kind of complementing that, and then the music comes back, you know. And and like you said, I mean, I interviewed a lot of people that I know. I interviewed my sister, who was actually my sister from my father's side, who was born in New York. A lot of musicians, some academics, and some friends, just who, all of them from different age brackets and different generations, but all from New York, that went through different experiences trying to find this connection to the identity of their parents or grandparents in some cases. And I mean, the whole project for me was just really enlightening, and I learned so much from it in terms of just kind of my own definition of what that means, you know, not only being Puerto Rican, but just being anything. I mean, just being connected to anywhere and why that is and how that could shift and change throughout your lifetime and how it could really just kind of mold everything and about your life and the way you think about things. And it was really just really great to work on it.
Tom Kniffick already mentioned that you were awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship and a MacArthur Grant, and I was wondering if those allowed you to work on this project, which was obviously a lot more time-consuming than putting together a set list and rehearsing with a quartet and putting an album out.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, in the case of the Guggenheim Fellowship, that was specifically for a project called Esta Plena, which we were talking about earlier before we started the interview. So that fellowship was specifically to work on that, and I went and did it, and it was really great. The MacArthur Fellowship was a little different because he wasn't for a specific project. Basically, it was just kind of like, they described it as almost like investing in your career or in your future as an artist in this case. So that's helped in many ways, you know, not only providing me with enough time to really do what I want to do and support my own projects, not only my recordings, but also, you know, tour support and being able to put together, you know, few projects also in Puerto Rico that I've been putting together there and you know, things like this CD, which I self-produced and put it together on my own. And of course, without this kind of help, like something like the MacArthur, it would have been harder to do something like this. So definitely, I mean, it's affected my life very positively, but in many different ways.
Tom, is this project that we just listened to, Identities Are Changeable, something that you can point to when your students ask, what is my future as a jazz player? What can I do once I get out of this wonderful college? What should I do with myself?
I don't know if it's so much as a professional guideline for them, but it's more an aesthetic guideline and also like maybe artistic inspirational sort of, you know, map for students to see that. We were talking last night about in classical music, it used to be that you get in the orchestra, you don't have a gig, there's nothing else to do. And I grew up kind of half in that world and half in the jazz world. But things are, you know, boundaries are coming down and opportunities in some areas are shrinking, but in other areas they're expanding. And I think that's the long view that you have to take. And that long view, I think, is exemplified in this project as great as anything I can think of off the top of my head.
Mm. Andrew, I'd like to ask you, and while Miguel sits here and takes it, I want you to talk about Miguel's specific style of playing and what you admire about it.
Well, so many things. I mean, first of all, for this project we've been discussing, for that to be your first crack at writing for big band is really staggering. I've written a lot. I've written a lot for big band, and it took me a long time to get to a place where I felt like, oh, okay, this is cool. So first and foremost, when I heard this, I just assumed he'd written for big band before. So and then just in terms of his playing, obviously he has an incredible rhythmic drive and ability. I mean, I was saying to my students, you're not really going to experience someone who can groove so hard with an alto saxophone. It's almost like he's his own rhythm section all the time. His time is just really so accurate. It's almost like getting paper cuts. It's so sharp. You know what I mean? I that's the only way I can really describe it. It's just so intense and it's just so on the money. You know, if you want to know where the time is, just listen to Miguel play, and that's where the time is. So, you know, to me, that's one of the things I admire. Another thing I really admire is his ability to take, you know, the rhythmic ideals from, you know, his lineage and his tradition and sort of marry them with some very interesting harmonic ideas that are not, for me, I'm no expert at in Latin music, but sometimes for me in Latin music, the harmonic side of the equation is a little bit too static for my taste. And that's not the case with Miguel's music. I mean, not only is the rhythmic element incredibly complex and grooving, but also the harmonic element is really there. And for me, I really respond to that. So I especially appreciate that in his music, that there's some really complicated harmony that's married with these incredibly intricate and vital rhythms. And that's what I really admire about his music.
Now, Andrew Rathbun, Tom Kniffick, Miguel Zenon, Jeremy Siskind, and Keith Hall all take the stage tonight at 8 o'clock. Is that wrong, Tom?
Very close. Scott Cowan joins us.
Oh.
And I tell everybody, Jeremy Siskind saw his music when we got it in, and he immediately booked a tour out of the country. And so we're relying on the talents of Gene Kniffick to keep us together tonight in the rhythm section.
Oh my goodness, that's fantastic. Okay, well now, Miguel, it's your turn to say, what have you guys rehearsed yet, and where are they up to the task?
Yeah. So we rehearsed yesterday with the guys here, and Andrew and Tom, and it went really well. You know, I mean, I got, like I said, I do a lot of stuff like this, and usually, you know, that first day it's like, okay, you know, what's gonna happen when we go in there and start playing? Sometimes it's like great, and sometimes it's not.
A lot
great.
Of stuff to work out,
you know. And I was like so glad just to hear how everyone had prepared so well, and just I worked with the big band yesterday too. We rehearsed, and we even performed some of the music last night at the club. So. It's so far so good. I'm really, really happy. Really, really happy.
Well, listeners, you have a chance to see Miguel Zenon and the Western Jazz Quartet tonight at 8 o'clock in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And tomorrow during the Western Invitational Jazz Festival, there's a 4 o'clock masterclass in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And at 7:30, the winning ensembles, both high school and college, will be performing in the Dalton Center after they've worked up some pretty tough-sounding arrangements here, some by Miguel and some other charts that you've all chosen for them. I would like to hear more about the Invitational Jazz Fest in a little bit, but why don't we spend some time listening to music from Esta Plena. This is a track called Pandero y Pagoda. Could you talk about that for a second?
Yeah. So Pandero y Pagoda, like I was saying before, the whole thing about Esta Plena, it was I treated it as almost like a research project, and of course the Guggenheim Fellowship helped a lot in that. I went down to Puerto Rico and interviewed a bunch of people, talked to a lot of musicians who basically just play this music for a living, and that's all they do. And learn a lot about the style and a lot about the history of the development of this music, and then wrote some music basically trying to pair up some ideas that were coming from that tradition and some ideas that were coming from the jazz tradition. I brought some of those guys over, some of those percussionists and vocalists over for the recording also, and basically wrote a lot of music around this style. It's a very percussive style. Almost, I like to think of it almost like our carnival music in a way. You know, that's this music that's really mobile, that you can kind of move around and go from house to house and play it, and it's kind of like off the cuff. You can just start playing it right away and like and just create something in the spot. And specifically this track, you know, I was listening to a lot of Brazilian music at the time also, and there's a style of samba called samba pagode, which is kind of like pop samba in a way, which I really like, and I've been kind of getting more and more into through the years. I was telling Tom about this yesterday. I was transcribing some of the songs and like kind of like putting down some of the harmony and some of the melodies, kind of like trying to learn about the form and how it worked. And so what I did was I started like looking to some of the similarities between that music and some of Plena's music, and a lot of the rhythmic accents and a lot of the cadences rhythmically are very, very similar, you know, which kind of is a whole different conversation, but kind of tells you a lot about all the connecting threads, especially in terms of Latin America, that you can find in different styles of music. And so I wrote something that combined a little bit of this song form that I had transcribed with some elements with Plena, and I wrote a melody and some lyrics to it also that kind of like following the tradition of the style, talk about how much we love Plena, how great it is.
Who sings?
My friends, this great percussionist and singer from singers from Puerto Rico, and I sing a little bit too.
you tuned in during the music, we are listening to a track called Pandero y Pagoda from the album Esta Plena by my guest, Miguel Zenón, who is appearing at the Western Invitational Jazz Festival tomorrow and tonight with the Western Jazz Quartet. Miguel and Tom Kanifik and Andrew Rathbun are all here still today to preview this performance and the festival. There is such a lot of things I could still ask here in the last 10 minutes of the hour. I'm really fascinated by how you approach composing and arranging. It's not the simple SATB stuff I'm used to in classical. I come from a classical background, and I know you have some influence there too. When did you kind of break away from these patterns that are at the base of jazz and these forms?
I think it's basically a little bit of both worlds, I feel. I mean, I still consider myself, sort of like a jazz musician in many ways. You know, I mean, the music that I listen to is mostly jazz, and what I study, and, you know, when I improvise, I'm definitely coming out of that language. I just feel that, you know, as a player and as a composer, that's sort of my first language, you know, like Puerto Rican music, Latin American music, that's what I grew up with, and jazz is almost like for me was like learning English in a way. So it was like something I learned later, and I had to kind of like take it like step by step and learn how to kind of find my own way within that tradition. And you know, by thinking about it that way, I feel that when I approach music, especially my own music, I always try to as much as I can just kind of respect both traditions and try to not necessarily like fuse them, but have them kind of like traveling, you know, hand in hand, you know, along and being respectful of each other. And, you know, sometimes you hear a little bit more from one side or a little more from the other side, but I feel that they're both always there, you know.
When I watched the concert last night on YouTube, it sure looked like you were really comfortable with the other three guys. Like, you were listening as much as you were playing. Even while you were playing, it sounded like you were hearing them at the same level you heard your own voice. Is that... that just looked really beautiful to me. My husband said, I'd watch any one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky. You know, I've been playing with the same guys for a very, very long time. And I was able to find guys who were great musicians, but also good people that I wanted to be around with, and also guys that wanted to play my music, you know, and enjoyed it. And you know, I'm a believer in this whole idea of like keeping a unit together and this whole chemistry that happens once we play together for a long time. And mm-hmm. I've just been very, very lucky in that sense.
I need to bring up SF Jazz Collective too. That's another group mm-hmm. that you've put a lot of time and effort and joy into.
Yeah, yeah. So that's sort of another example of that kind of idea of like working with the same organization for a very long time. I mean, the SF Jazz Collective started about 11 years ago, and I was one of the first guys I'm actually the only remaining member of that first group of guys. And it's just been an amazing experience, not only musically, but also in terms of creating a relationship with them, with the organization and everything that they're doing. It's such a special opportunity in terms of what the band represents. You know, I mean, it's a very unique group of people and just the way we work as a band. I mean, we don't really have a leader. We all kind of run it at the same time, and we get a lot.
That sounds a little tricky to me. I mean, this is a band of, you're all band leaders in your own right.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you just get together and butt heads?
No, not necessarily. You know, I mean, it could happen from time to time, I think, but kind of going into it with knowing that that's what we're shooting for helps, you know? Knowing, okay, so this scenario is going to be different than other bands. Once just one guy's calling the shots here, you know, we get our opportunity. We get opportunities to bring music in. So that's kind of how it works. Whoever brings the chart, he's running the rehearsal at that time, and he's kind of leading the band. Then when we play, you know, we all get chances to speak and, you know, kind of share the solos and all that stuff. And you know, it's just been it's just been really an amazing experience for me, probably one of the greatest musical experiences that I've had, just being able to not only play with a lot of my heroes, really, I mean, some of the greatest musicians that I've ever played, that I've ever heard, I've played with that specific ensemble, but also getting to write for them and getting to write for the band and learning more about yourself by writing music and arranging and getting that music, having that music played by these amazing musicians and having it recorded, etc. So it's been great, really great.
As I said before, I would encourage listeners to look up MiguelZenon.com, SFJazzCollective.com. These are all great resources for his music and playing. And Tom, last word to you. Would you again tell us about the Invitational Jazz Festival and some of the treats that are in store?
Well, this is the 35th year, so there's some real legacy going on here. I guess it was started by Trent Kinniston. And so the thing is, there's a tradition of, it's invitational, so we have relationships with a lot of high school programs throughout the Midwest, and we keep those going. Some years, certain groups can't make it due to certain conflicts. Then we add other groups. We have groups coming from Chicago now that are new to us. And everybody to a T, I mean, Andrew's relatively new to it and he got to experience for the first time. I mean, you know, I hope that, you know, you understand when I say this from my perspective, a lot of the directors and students come away saying they had an experience that's unlike any other festival because of the artists we bring and the respect that we show them in the process, the organization of the day. And it's for a lot of the students, it's their first brush with, you know, great jazz artists and the first certainly brush with our university and get to know what we do here. In the last lab band rehearsal, somebody said, well, how many of you have gone through the festival in high school? More than half the hands went up. And I'm going to guess that in the jazz orchestra, it's probably 3/4, you know. So we meet a lot of our future students through this festival. It's an exhausting, wonderful day.
Did you have a last thing to mention?
I want to mention that it's the thing I like about it the most is that it's a festival and it's not a music competition. I break out into hives with the ideal of a music competition. I don't like that. So it's really great to gather all these students and just sort of celebrate our shared love of this music. And some of them, it really energizes a lot of them to explore and to investigate this kind of music more after they, you know, come and experience what goes on here. So it's very infectious, and I'm really happy that it's a festival.
It kicks off tonight at 8 o'clock when the Western Jazz Quartet takes the stage with Miguel Zenon and continues tomorrow at 4 p.m. There's an open master class in the Dalton Center and a final concert at 7:30 featuring the winning ensembles. And the whole festival can be found online at wmujazz.com. And I guess that brings us to the end of the hour. Again, I wish you could stay another hour and we could hear even more music. Thank you very much, Andrew, Tom, and Miguel.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks.